Tupou driving hard at the line. Tupou, has he done it? No, it's play on. They go wide. They go wide. They get the try. It's O'Connor for Queensland.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Rugby Fixation. We're jotting down episode number 41, and I'm with regular co-host Alex North to discuss a fair few things going on in rugby. So, Northy, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm good. Quiet weekend this weekend. Not much rugby on, or not much rugby union anyway. There's lots of club finals on, but in terms of, yeah, test matches, it's a quiet one.
We're very ashamed to mention that we've been watching the league this weekend, which isn't great. And North is actually tailing me up in the Supercoach at the moment with Turbo just running rings around me. But that'll be probably the last we mention a league this pod, because we do want to cover some of the things going on, namely the Super Rugby format for 2022, have a look at the fixtures for the Rugby Championship that have been finalised, and also touch on something that I've been sort of teasing for 2 weeks, which is a look at the depth that the Wallabies have tried to build, in particular the Wallabies versus Barbarians match from 2017. So we'll sort of dive into those, I guess. But I guess one thing we can mention is that we have had the Hospital Cup and the Queensland Premier Rugby on this weekend, so we've had some of the East games come through, and while our team, the East, haven't had as much representation, they're doing pretty well. So North, any chance of getting out to Suncorp to see any of those games, you reckon, for the finals? Or because East aren't there, won't bother?
Nah, Colts won. We're in with a really good crack at winning the final. They've made it through. I think they've only dropped a game or two this season. It would have been really good to watch them. I'll be out of Brisbane next weekend on a Bucks weekend. However, it will wrap up Sunday, so maybe it might be a dash to Suncorp and get a couple beers in me and see how I'm going.
I think that's a bit of a flashback to the Brisbane Tens where we went to, and just at Suncorp, whether we were watching that much rugby remains to be seen, but definitely in for a good weekend. So we'll dive right into the Super Rugby format, because that's something that has been talked about a lot, and Northern and I haven't really discussed our own opinions of it just yet, so it'll be sort of a first time for each other as well as the listeners as to how we feel. But basically what's happening is we've got 12 teams, the 10 existing teams from Super Rugby Trans-Tasman, 5 each from Australia and New Zealand, as well as Fiji and Andrua and Moana Pacifica joining. And the talk before was that we'd have two pools split between the Aussies and Kiwis with one each thrown in. But what they've opted for this time is 12 teams all playing a round robin, once against each other, and then 3 additional games to be added on. And while there's still a bit of debate around that, the other part that I guess has pricked some ears up is that the finals will be based on a top 8. So out of the 12 teams, the top 8 teams will get selected, and one will play 8, 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, and 4 versus 5. So that in itself is interesting. Northy, we'll just get to the 12 teams first and how that's sort of playing out. Each team will get 14 games, which is pretty good. The, one game against everyone makes sense, but how do you think the last 3 games should be divvied up?
Yeah, it's interesting. That was probably one of, I guess, my biggest concerns is, the sort of round robin against every other team plus an extra couple games. It's still only going to leave them with, I think, is it a 14-round season?
Yeah.
Which at the end of the day isn't too many games. In a recent podcast I was listening to, there was talk about how many games they're playing over in England and France and all that kind of stuff. So, to only have, 12 or 14 games, excluding finals, games worth of professional football in these guys heading into a test season and developing players is a little bit concerning. I wouldn't mind that number being a lot closer to 20. Maybe it's just a case of maybe not a double round robin, but maybe play everyone in their own league twice and then play everyone else once or something like that, just to get a couple extra games in. I think with the current format, though, they've done the best with what they can, and I'm sure they'll experiment with it as the years go on.
Mm. It sounds like the podcast you're listening to was Pick and Drive, where we're sort of discussing. That's we'll give a quick shout out to Ando and Mitch for running that, and Ando for digging out the stat comparing Marcus Smith and Noah Lolasia. It was, I think, particularly interesting seeing the gulf in experience there from two similarly aged players. But I think one of the things you touched on really well is that we do need more games. And one of the things that I've liked sort of hearing or seeing is that at some point, whether it's before the season, ideally, or maybe after the season, The Super Rugby AU sides just have like a mini Super Rugby AU where they just sort of play each other and get, you know, an extra 5 games in each. And that just sort of bumps it that bit closer to 20, assuming that some of the teams play finals. So that might be a nice outcome. But I think with the 3 games at the end, we were pushing to try and make it, I guess, international comps where you verse players that are either Aussies versus Aussies or Kiwis versus Kiwis. And they weren't a fan of that because of, you know, how much that would benefit the Australian sides and not necessarily the Kiwis. So I guess what we want to get to is the 2 options. Should it be completely randomised where the teams just verse any 3 teams? And we're left in a position where Reds might face the Crusaders, Blues and Hurricanes at the end of a season. Or something where teams are roughly split based on previous rankings as to a top tier, middle tier or bottom tier, and you just verse 1 from each. So what were your thoughts be around that? Do you really mind those last 3 games?
Yeah, well, I think personally, I prefer, I guess, randomised. I think most sports tend to do that when you're at a World Cup. I guess they are kind of pooling it based on your position overall. But at the end of the day, it does come down to luck of the draw and is somewhat random. I'd probably be for random. I think they've gone the other way. And I think they have split these last 3 games out into the tiers, which, you know, I can understand why they've done that. But at the end of the day, I think random gets the same result and it might make for a few more exciting and interesting matchups.
Especially if we could get an Aussie developer or someone to try and make the random decisions. Maybe get a few extra games where, you know, Reds have a bit more of a favourable outcome. But probably at least the other point is who's going to be the easy beat this year? Because, well, I guess for 2022, because for 2021, we sort of knew it was going to be the Waratahs. They just lost so much talent and didn't really have that experience. And we've seen with the Wallabies what a difference just having Hooper back in it makes. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. But with 2 new teams sort of coming through, we've seen the Drua already do quite well with the NRC level. Are the Drua and Pacifica the 2 easy beat teams, or do we still think that maybe the Waratahs or, you know, Rebels might, you know, belong in that same sort of tier?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'd really like to see those Pacifica and Fijian Drua teams do well. I think, you know, they might struggle at the start a little bit. Obviously, it's going to be another step up in footy for most of them. They'll have some test players, but, you know, for lots of them, it will be, I guess, the most professional rugby they've played across a few weeks and a couple months. So it will be a step up for them. And it, obviously, the travel is probably something that's going to hit those guys a little bit harder, more so than the other teams. Obviously, I don't think we've got a draw yet, but you can assume they're going to be on the road a little bit more than they will be at home. So hopefully that doesn't affect them too much. I'd like to see them do well. I think they will, without getting into predictions too early, I'm sure we'll have another podcast on that, but I think they might be down the bottom. But they'll be very exciting to watch and wouldn't be surprised if they get a few upset wins. But yeah, I'd probably be grouping them maybe just above the Force and Tars in, I guess, a ranking.
Lovely. Because the predictions will come through and we're keen to see those once squads get announced. The Reds have got on the board early with that. But I think one of the things that is worthwhile debating is the final structure, because obviously with 12 teams, having more than half of them go through paints quite a different picture depending on how we look at it. And the 2 arguments I'm sort of wrestling with is the first one being, if we, you know, have 8 teams go through, that's great because it's representation for Australia. It guarantees, you know, at least 1 Australian team. You know, the worst case being 5 Kiwis, the Fijians and the Moana Pacifica teams make it through and we get 1 Aussie fixture. But probably more realistically, we could get, 2, maybe 3 Aussie teams playing finals rugby. And the other side to that argument is that, well, you know, should you be rewarded for finishing 8th or 7th in a group of 12? So can you maybe help me out with that? Should this be seen as a positive thing, having 8 teams go through for Aussie rugby? Or is this going to be another thing we look at as a participation medal?
Yeah, I think it'll be great to have, a longer final series. I think if they shorten it down too much, it loses its shine a little bit when you've only got maybe 3 finals being played on that first weekend. Having a nice full weekend is probably ideal. With the format, I guess, from what I've read, it sounds like it's first versus 8th, 7th versus 2nd, so have you. However, for those teams ranked in the top four, I think it looks like it's still going to be elimination. So if eight happens to jag an upset against one, they'll be out, which I'm probably not a huge fan of. I don't think that gives enough reward to being, I guess, the top ranked or in the top four ranked teams of the season. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. I'd probably tweak that. I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, losing playoffs and have those top four get another crack potentially if it gets to that. But I think overall, again, it's the first time that this structure's been played. Hopefully there's a bit of tweaking to it and I'm sure they'll refine it over the next few years. But I think for the first iteration, you know, there might be a few kinks, but I'm keen to see how it plays.
I think that'll be the interesting thing is just because we haven't seen this structure before, we've got to go back to 2005 before we had, you know, a 12-team comp. And even then, that was just a straight round robin. But looking at that comp, the team that finished eight in 2002, 2003, and 2004, so some of the last years of the comp, all those teams had less wins than losses, which I think probably points to a team that isn't successful and probably doesn't deserve finals. But at the same time, my big thing is I always hate the top six, which we had for a little while, where, you know, one and two get a bye week in the finals. I kind of like always having a team playing. So I'm very keen to see how the top eight plays out, but I do think a top four probably would have been fairer. But I'm very keen to see, you know, this obviously does give a bit more chance for the Aussies. So even if that does mean just a few more finals matches for teams that are struggling to make it through, that can be seen as a good thing. So at the moment, happy with it. Keen to see the other squads so we can start ranking how the Aussies maybe stack up. Because we saw with the Trans-Tasman this year that the Reds looked great as the Brumbies, but then they couldn't really measure up to the Kiwis. So maybe another year under the belt does help them out a little bit. So we might segue from that into the Rugby Championship. Because the fixtures there have been finalised, there was a lot of heated debate between Australia and New Zealand because, you know, New Zealand didn't come over straight away. They weren't looking to come over just with the COVID risk, and that's sort of been addressed now. And we've got a fixture coming up next Sunday on Father's Day in Perth, which is great, before the Super Rugby, the Rugby Championship kicks off properly in Queensland. So I guess firstly for us, we got six of the games either in the Gold Coast or Brisbane, which is very close to us. So how many of those are you hoping to get to?
Yeah, well, at least Suncorp, but the Gold Coast game looks pretty enticing as well. Yeah. I'm probably a little wary of making the trip down the M1 though. We haven't really performed very well at the Gold Coast. I'd hate to head down and watch a loss or a poor game from us, unfortunately.
Especially with that first game at the Gold Coast being against South Africa, that's really not a great way to start, given we've not got the best sort of matchup with them just in terms of our personnel and strategy. They really do kind of dominate in that regard. But we've got the game against New Zealand first in Perth. So that third Bledisloe and I guess the start of the Rugby Championship in Australia. The interesting thing with this one is that both sides will be without a few players. So we've seen New Zealand have announced a squad that's going to be without Dane Coles, Aaron Smith, Richie Moanga and Sam Whitelock. So that's, you know, four people guaranteed to be in their best 23. So it does help us out a little bit. But we're also without Luke Ansaldo-Loto and Hunter Paisami. So I think five of those six guys all for, first child reasons or maybe even second child for some of them. So it does edge us in our favour a little bit. But I guess, Northie, with all those players out, are the Wallabies a chance to win that game? Like, can we get back into the Rugby Championship or it's a little bit too far for us?
Yeah, look, I'd always like to think we're a chance. We sort of got toyed with last game. You know, I was really confident after the first half and you know, we all saw what happened there, which was pretty disappointing. I think, you know, definitely in with a chance. The outs help us, but at the end of the day, the depth New Zealand have is pretty insane. You know, the players that are going to be replacing these people away, you know, are just as good, really. So, honestly, I think our outs will probably hurt us a little bit more than their outs just because we don't have the depth. Perth isn't too bad for us. We usually play pretty well there, obviously. I think we had a draw or a win there.
Yeah, the 47-26 win 2019. Yeah,
2019 or 2018, yeah. So, look, track record, it's good. Not as good as Suncorp. If all the games were being played at Suncorp, I think most Wallabies supporters, even the painted on Sky Blue supporters, would be pretty keen because Whenever we've been to the games, the atmosphere really tends to pick up. It's a great vibe there, and I don't know if the players feel it, but I think, again, in a podcast that we've listened to recently, I think we're 5 from our last 6 games at Suncorp for the Wallabies.
Yeah, dating back to 2011, roughly, I think we've got 3 or 4 wins and a draw and only the one loss, which was by a point. So it's a really good fortress for us. And then we're going to need as much help as we can get, I think, being the Springboks. So it's nice that we got one of the fixtures there against them. I guess just going back to that game that we got smashed by the All Blacks. So we were watching that here. I think we can only describe it as face and hand moments when we saw the intercept. And then, again, later on, we just, absolutely capitulated. How many calories do you think we ate after the match to try and make up for it, would you have to say? Just to give an idea for the listeners how we dealt with that loss.
Yeah, look, there was a bit of a emotional eating afterwards, definitely. What did we have? About 8 big boys here, and I reckon we're putting away 2,000 cals each. So we're probably looking at, 16 to 20,000 net cals.
I think that's what we kind of need is, you see, whenever they do the first scrum of the match, you've got the pack weights for each side. It's, roughly about 890 kilos, maybe, some of the bigger teams kept around 900. I would have liked to have seen our couch stats because we were looking pretty girthy and not maybe in the same way that, Michael Hooper looks, or maybe a bit closer to Taniela Tupo in some regards. But we were doing pretty well for ourselves. Our numbers weren't embarrassing. So I'd be keen to get the stats up there just for, the people at home. Maybe we've got a few other couch weights that would be pretty proud to plug for some of those matches. But the last thing I want to ask with the Rugby Championship, this is probably the last chance we've got to see Quade Cooper get some game time before O'Connor comes back from injury, and maybe a chance for Simon Karevi to come back into the fold with Hunter Paisami out. I guess, how badly do you want to see both of those two play? Or maybe it's just one of them. Like, we've got a lot of these ex-Reds players, Duncan Payao included, back in the squad for the first time. So how many of those guys do you want to see actually getting some minutes?
Yeah, I think the obvious one, maybe, for the next game would be Karevi. Seems like a pretty like-for-like replacement for Paisami being out. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him get game time. That I guess they could push Hodge into 12 and then still play Ikitau or something like that. But I think, a player of Karevi's standard, I'm surprised he hasn't got game time yet. I guess just getting up to fitness from sevens and familiarising himself with the game a little bit and the squad could be the reasons. But yeah, I think he comes straight in. As for Quade, always been a huge Quade fan. I wouldn't mind seeing him get some game time. In saying that, I'd hate to see him come on and, throw a couple cutouts and us get romped and that ends up being his last game in goal. That would be a little bit disappointing on, up and down career. But, I like to look at the bright side, and he has done a lot for Australian rugby. And obviously, as a Reds supporter, he's done heaps for us. So, yeah, I think I'm on the fence about Quade. I wouldn't mind seeing him play again. But at the same time, I think Karevi's got to come straight in.
Karevi straight in is definitely one I'm keen to see. And with Quade, I think the reason I brought him up was mostly because we want to talk about the 2017 fixture between the Wallabies and the Barbarians. And I guess we're trying to segue into that now, because the Wallabies under Michael Checker did a pretty good job of, I guess, nailing on their starting team. And they had a pretty good idea of some of their players throughout a decent chunk of Checker's career. But then with the Folau fallout and a few things, with different selectors coming into the fold ahead of the 2019 World Cup, the team lost a bit of its shape. And I saw 2017 as probably the catalyst for a lot of that. It wasn't really a great year for our test. It was slightly better than 16 and 18. But we had a game where the Wallabies played the Barbarians, which was made up of, 20 of the 23 players were Australian eligible. So it really was like a bit of a gauge to try and find who could be our World Cup bolters and who could be, I guess, the players that, would genuinely start or might just need to ply their trade a little bit longer. And the reason why this team comes up is because we're less than 4 years down the track and only a fair, 7 of these 43 players that were eligible actually went to the World Cup. And out of that current crew, there's about 13 that are in the squad at the moment. But only 8 of those players have actually played underneath Rennie. So we didn't build, or at least I don't think we built overly well into this season. I would have liked to have seen more of these players either, still in that Wallabies frame or, perhaps back then choosing players that would be more in the frame, because we've got a lot of players in this list that, you know, were on the edge of retirement or have since retired. In fact, there's about 10 or so of them that have retired since. So for those listening at home, I'll just go through the teams. Some of the names will stick out. You'll be like, oh, yeah, well, he's in the squad and that's pretty good. And some of them will be like, gee, as late as, you know, October 2017, we were still using so-and-so. Why was he not used more? So for the actual Wallabies side, we had Tom Robertson, Jordan Yalesi, Alan Alalatoa, Kane Douglas, Lucan Salakai-Loto, Ned Hannigan, Jack Dempsey, Lapetti Tamani, Nick Phipps, Duncan Paiawa, Israel Folau, Billy Meeks, Samu Karevi, Henry Spate, and Carmichael Hunt in the starting team. And then on the bench, Stephen Moore, Tetra Faulkner, Jermaine Ainsley, Ben McCalman, Liam Wright, Joe Powell, Curtis Rona, and Isaiah Parisi. So just going through that list, there's a whole heap of those players. I mean, only six of them are currently in the squad. Paiawa, Karevi, and Parisi haven't played underneath Rennie, neither has Tom Robertson. So very few of them getting some game time. Just from that list, Northie, looking through there, were you shocked to see more of those players not feature at the World Cup? Because really, out of that list, we only had, what, five of them, Karevi, Dempsey, Salakai-Loto, Alalatoa, and Yalesi, that went to the World Cup. Would you have liked to have seen more of these players given minutes?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think probably would have been good to see a few more players, you know, make the move or make the World Cup squad in the end. I think we touched on before we started recording that there were a couple of players being rested around that time. So, and part of the reason this game was played was to give other people an opportunity to, I guess, stake a claim to make that squad. I think, still think that the numbers are a bit disappointing for how close we are to the World Cup there. You know, you really want to be having a pretty good idea about who you're going to be bringing over there, and to see the sort of numbers added up like you've done here, you know, it makes you ask a few questions about, I guess, the planning and the bigger picture of the World Cup, because, you know, every sort of top eight, top 10 rugby team, that's what they build towards. Mm. You know, everyone's building towards the cup. You know, these nice wins along the way, you know, like Six Nations and Rugby Championships and Bledisloes and whatever Shield New Zealand and South Africa play for, I'm sure there's one. You know, they're nice wins along the way, but everyone remembers the World Cups. And at the end of the day, I think that's what all these players are dreaming of, is to make it to the World Cup. So, yeah, to see that few people go on to play at the World Cup, you know, leave some questions around, I guess, the squad development and management.
Mm. And look, that was just a Wallaby side. So we'll go into the Barbarians team, because a few names from here are great names. I'm glad they got the opportunity, because they've, you know, jumped into the Wallabies side and have really made a name for themselves since. But so many of these names, you're thinking, like, why would we be putting these guys up against the Wallabies when they're not playing for a position, or at the very least, they definitely don't seem to have any more. We're looking at names. So we've got Pat Cowan, Andrew Reddy, Taniela Tupou, who's obviously come through, Luke Jones, Sam Carter, Issy Naisirani, Matt Hodgson, Wycliffe Palu, Augustine Pulu, Quade Cooper, Etu Nambuli, George Mawala, Takeli Nayaravoro, Tom Banks, and Tim Nanai Williams in the starting team, with Anaru Rangi, Ben Alexander, Selassie Manu, Matt Phillip, Kane Koteka, Theo Strang, Sam Green, and Andrew Kellaway on the bench. And we're just going through those two teams. You know, 20 plus of these players are either overseas or, you know, available but not selected. A good chunk have retired. It's just amazing to me, so many of these players not, you know, being in the fold right now, because we're looking for hookers. The Wallabies don't really have a nailed on hooker yet. But at this time, you know, this close to the World Cup, you know, and only 4 years ago, we were still persisting with Stephen Moore, who's, you know, 38 and playing for UQ Rugby over this weekend. And I think he's just played his way into his first, you know, opportunity for a Hospital Cup trophy. We've got Andrew Reddy, who, you know, just had kind of the worst attitude at the Reds, went overseas for a little bit, is now at the Force, but in his absolute bum compared to Fleti Kaitu. And then Anaru Rangi, who was a little bit of a workhorse for the Rebels, but never really got much of a call-up. So many of these problem positions, we're not seeing addressed here. And even as I'm trying to build depth into some of these squad players, you know, Nick Phipps, Augie Pulu, Joe Powell, and Theo Strang, so many of them are, you know, Phipps obviously accrued a lot of caps for the Wallabies, and Joe Powell got a few games too, but none of them went to the World Cup. And more importantly, none of them are in the squad now. So I guess just going back to that original question, some of the names stick out. It's good to see some of them get a crack, but I guess how can we learn from this, and which sort of games should we be seeing more of to try and get this development going? Because the idea of the Wallabies versus Barbarians is great. And I like that they're trying to build, you know, depth here, but I just think this was such a waste of time in hindsight, just based off who's actually improved or, you know, come into the squad because of this.
Yeah, I think we've had a couple conversations about, I guess, the concept of an Australia A team, and it would be great to see more of it. You know, there once was a time where it seemed like, you know, they got a couple games a year, and to build that squad depth, I think it really helps. And, you know, just giving people an opportunity to take a step up from Super Rugby experience, and not only Super Rugby experience from match play, but, you know, even just being in that, you know, step up and level up environment where everyone really needs to, you know, be as professional as they can be and get that opportunity to travel and bond as a team, you know, all of that stuff plays into it as well. Mm. You know, the Maori team, you know, play a couple of tests every year. You know, I think they'd play three at least every year, mm. Which is great for them. They're always exciting to watch. And I think it does really help build depth, and, you know, it can help encourage players who maybe, you know, just miss one of these squads or are just outside the match day 23. Still gives them something to work towards and another opportunity at a very high level to, yeah, stake their claim for getting into the team.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you're right with the Maori team. Like, players like, you know, Bryn Hall and Alex Nankervell, you know, getting some good game time there. And while they're not really that close to the All Black squad, if we do see those injuries prop up, like we've seen the inside centre jersey, you know, with Goodhue injured and Nani Lamape overseas, Havili sort of got that jersey and, you know, all his pending anything else happening. But short of, you know, trying to shift ALB back in there and maybe trying to make Tapia at 12, they don't have a whole heap of options available. So if, you know, Nankervell's at least played a few tests against, you know, Tonga or Samoa for the Maori All Blacks, then that does make his job a lot easier. But I do like you mentioned that Australia A, I'll, you know, bring up the humble brag of getting a 100 plus likes on Twitter with a, you know, stupid green versus gold suggestion. And I think Twitter really is just a breeding ground for, you know, armchair selections, which is great. That's what we're sort of all in for as rugby fans. And one of the things I did was just putting that team together. I think so much of it was just hinging on getting the players some game time. Because, you know, as you pointed out, with having players at least get that experience of traveling overseas or, you know, getting those sort of fixtures in, a lot of the players in the squad haven't been given game time. Because of the lack of experience, Rennie's stuck with a really consistent 23-man squad the whole way through. And for the most part, only made changes based on injuries or the really short turnaround between the second and third French test. But if we look at the list of players there, you know, Paiawa and Karevi, they haven't got any game time yet. Poni Faamasuli has been in every squad Rennie's picked, but hasn't, you know, seen a minute on the pitch. Fuleti Kaitu'u, you know, still isn't really getting the game time, partially because of injuries, but also, you know, we're trying to get that hooker jersey cemented. Then also players on the squad, you know, Trevor Hosea, Nick Frost and Rob Liotta, they've been sort of in and around, but just haven't been given any minutes. So I think that really does give them the opportunity if, you know, they can get some minutes together. I guess we can just tie this in with the Rugby Championship, because we spoke about all this and, you know, we both like to see the development of players a little bit better and streamlining, I think, between who's in the interest of Dave Rennie and under that sort of squad and actually getting minutes. Are there any players that haven't gotten minutes yet that you'd like to see get some game time in the Rugby Championship, whether that's against New Zealand, South Africa or Argentina?
Yeah, look, I actually don't mind what Rennie's done with, I guess, sticking with a pretty solid 23. I think given he's the new coach, he's got a lot to deal with and he wants to work out, I guess, who his best 23 is. And I like that he's stuck with 23, or for the most part, I think he what is 26 or 27
yeah.
players so far. I like that. It allows the team to build cohesion. It allows these players to, I guess, you know, give an extended opportunity to perform. You know, you hear it in, I guess, the Queensland Origin team a lot, that the incumbent, you know, even if they're sort of out of form, you know, they're still getting picked for Origin just on the base of past performances. there's probably a few people who might have used up all their lifelines for the Wallabies so far. So I think, you know, a little bit of change won't be bad. But on a whole, I don't mind this concept of sticking with a pretty similar 23. To be honest, there's no one, I guess, outside of the squad of injured players that I'm sort of biting at the bit to see. I've been pretty impressed by most Wallabies, you know, excluding, I guess, the second half of the last game. Everyone's been doing a pretty good job, you know, looking at the names there. Val's been really good. You know, Wilson's been good. Tate's been unreal. You know, Noah's been on and off, but, you know, for someone that young, I think overall, you know, he's been pretty good. Iketau's been really strong as well. Banks is probably running the hardest I've seen him run in a while.
Actually breaking a tackle or two.
Yeah, breaking a tackle to it and looking like he wants to break a tackle instead of sort of hitting the defensive line and stopping. So, yeah, look, as a whole, I can't really see anyone there that I'm really keen to see that hasn't already got game time. What about you?
I think for me, I like we could name pretty much everyone in the squad that's been given minutes other than Matt Tamur, I think would nearly be the easiest way to go around it. So yeah. You were nice enough to leave his name off the list. But yeah, I think he's probably the name that most people have been thinking about when it comes to, you know, someone that's so experienced and you want to be doing well for the team. And you can see and justify why he's in the squad, but just hasn't really delivered on that, you know, sort of promise or at least that expectation yet. The thing that I do like is with Salako Lodo and Paisami out for next weekend, while I'd like both of them in the 23, it does give the option to see a few other people. So what I'd really like is for Isaac Rodder to come into the frame. I kind of hope that he does get that opportunity. And it probably works well with Salako Lodo being out because I think they probably clash heads the most, just both being the Reds locks and Salako Lodo definitely pointing out with every opportunity how he went for the money. So a week without him might be nice. Just to get Rodder back in the frame because he was probably our second best lock and quite easily our second best lock when he went away behind Rory Arnold. And then I really want to see Karevi in there. I think a Karevi-Iketau centre combo would be awesome at the moment. Again, it creates the headache of Karevi's probably the most X-factor back we have on offer. So what position does that mean Paisami fills in and does he get the same position sort of consistently between the Wallabies and Reds? Because that, again, leads to that sort of, you know, building the cohesion, that nice team dynamic. But I'd be really keen to see those two come in. I don't think there's another centre that I'm wanting to see. And while Nick Frost looks exciting, I don't really want to have Swain and Frost in there, leaving Phillip as, you know, maybe 10 or 11 caps, however many he's got, as the most experienced. So yeah, I'm hoping Rodder comes back into the frame. And I'm really hoping they don't do a Tamua-Iketau combination. I could probably live with Tamua Karevi if they went that way. But even then, I think we've probably seen enough in the five tests so far that Tamua's not really offering anything, you know, that exceptional. We could throw Karevi in there because he's experienced and just sort of wait for James O'Connor to return just so that we've got that experienced 10-12 option in the team somewhere. But I'm excited.
Yeah, so Karevi's probably the exception. I wasn't thinking of him not having game time yet because he has come back from overseas, but yeah, I'd love to see him in gold again.
Yeah. So the last thing, just before we wrap it up, how many wins do you think we can get from the last five games?
Well, so what, we're playing New Zealand once, South Africa twice, and Argentina twice.
Yeah.
Five games. Three would be nice.
Three would be unreal.
Three would be nice. I'd be really disappointed if it were two or less. Or less probably being the operative word. If we, you know, have a loss and a draw against Argentina or something like that, you know, it'd be a bit hard to swallow. I think, you know, South Africa always going to be tough. If we can sneak one win against them and beat Argentina twice and, you know, let's be honest, against the All Blacks next weekend, hopefully if we can just put in a better performance against
respectable.
Them.
Respectable.
Yeah, respectable performance, I'll be pretty happy. So if we can go 3 from 5, I think that gives us something to work with and leaves some respect on the table for us. Yeah. What about you?
I think your emotions summed up perfectly. I think it is funny. With 3 wins, I would be stoked. Like, that would be unreal. You know, ticks all around. Like, I wouldn't care how the other games go. With 1 win, I'd be shattered. That would be absolute, you know, shit. That would be really poor and well below standards. And 2 wins, I'm so indifferent about because I feel like that should be good. given we haven't beaten Argentina. But I just think that's such a an eh result. Like, I guess I would be happy if we beat Argentina twice, given Rennie hasn't beaten them. And it would, you know, at least give us, you know, the third spot in the ladder. But at the same time, it just feels like very, very uninspiring. So I think if it's two wins and it's one against Argentina, one against either New Zealand or South Africa, that looks a little bit better. Unfortunately, I don't see us beating South Africa. So it's really going to have to be this weekend pulling off something, you know, quite magical without some of their key stars. Or otherwise, just hoping we get the two wins against Argentina and it's just sort of, you know, building for the spring tour. But yeah, it's an interesting sort of note to finish on, just given like two wins should be good, but it doesn't seem like a good achievement.
Yeah, I guess with only five games as well, you know, it is very much on a knife edge. You know, the difference between two and three wins is quite a lot. So I can definitely understand how it sits that in that, I guess, you know, indifferent kind of state where, you know, two wins you're not mad about, but three seems really good. And you know, we haven't even mentioned four or five wins.
Dare we dream.
I think, yeah, that's probably wishful thinking. But yeah, I think if we were to grade it, if we end up with three wins out of the next five, you know, that's probably a B performance from the Wallabies. I think we'd all take it.
No, I hadn't even considered four or five wins. So let's chalk that up as the goal, and anything less than
we'll mark accordingly.
Yeah. All right. Well, awesome. Great talking to you again, Uthian. Good to have another pod in the ether after a little absence off. We'll have one again next week, so I'll be keen to sort of chat, you know, with whichever guest that happens to be on that week. Yeah, it should be quite exciting. But thanks for listening if you've made it this far. Go to the Wallabies this weekend, and hopefully you're a Red supporter too and just chomping at the bit for the 2022 Super Rugby format.